Time for the Wintrust Business Lunch Hour. I'm Bob Surratt.
And I'm Marianne Murciano. Here we go. It's Wednesday.
And coming up, we'll talk about job interviews and how people can avoid the stress and fear and anxiety of a job interview. That's coming up in this hour. And in the hashtags, likes, and shares department, we'll get Scott Kleinberg in here on social media business. And he's talking about digital eye strain, among other things, today.
I think we're all suffering.
Mm-hmm. First up, Terry Savage. And let's begin with what's happening on the stock market, Terry. And the headline, stocks hold lower amid rising yields. Yellen remarks on valuation. What did she say?
She's got a lot of nerve, that's all I can say. But she's Fed chairman, so she can do that. So the Fed chairman is the one responsible for putting the money into the economy, right? And that's the money that's pushed stocks to very high levels. Okay, we're down 106 points at the moment. Interest rates are rising a bit on hopes that tomorrow's job report will be strong, and that means that the economy's strong. There'll be some demand for money. So Janet Yellen goes and speaks at a conference yesterday with Christine Lagarde. Many Chicagoans may remember her when she was in Chicago. She's now head of the IMF. And Janet Yellen said, well, equity valuations are running high. So she's giving a warning. She's not calling it a bubble yet. You remember when Alan Greenspan did that. Fed chairman, I think, should not comment on the stock market.
All right. So what do you mean if it's a bubble yet?
That's what's reported that she said. She's not calling it a bubble.
But that's pretty scary words.
A lot of smart money is saying, hey, the market's pretty fully valued. And they've been saying it for a while, by the way. But what's kept pushing the market higher, as I've kept saying, is not so much great earnings, although the economy's, inching along. It's mainly been that where does all the money go? Not only, your money, my money, and our retirement plans, but the rest of the world comes to America because it's the safest place and the rates are relatively higher here than in Europe and in Asia. So that's all going in the stock market. Now, the Fed has kept rates low for a long, long time. They've created a lot of money. They haven't sucked it out of the economy yet. So to complain about the fact that all that money's going into the stock market it just makes me laugh. Well, okay, you want to do something about it? All you have to do is raise rates, and I promise you, Janet Yellen, you will have an impact on the stock market. Stocks will immediately fall because people will say, oh, no, rates are going up. Well, let's go buy something else.
Let's get that message to Janet Yellen immediately.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she knows that. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but when it becomes a headline that the Fed chairman thinks that any market is too high or too low, you've got to think, don't complain about it. You're the only person in the world that could do something about it.
TerrySavage.com has an interesting post headline, Time to Buy a House Now. And are we talking about most areas around here?
Yeah, this is a general overall thought. We always make our financial plans looking backward, remembering what we're scared of most. And the most recent scare, of course, was the real estate scare. And so what we have seen is that younger people, maybe because they don't see the house as a cornerstone of wealth anymore the way their parents and grandparents did, have avoided getting into the market. And it's astounding that new home sales aren't as strong as they should be. I think you can get some deals now from buyers. But we have money around. We have the lowest interest rates and mortgage rates that, in long-term perspective, they're really low. And I think that if inflation does return or if interest rates go up, there's going to be a scramble. This is our last best chance to get in. You cannot rent forever because rents also will reflect rising interest rates and economic growth. And the fact that although we are now announcing in Chicago, you've seen some huge announcements of apartments coming online over the next 3 or 4 years. But right now there's a rent squeeze. And if you move this month, yesterday, this week, you're paying higher rents for sure than last year.
Are people still moving like in May? Is that a big thing still?
That used to be the move. It is still the moving season. And a lot of apartment leases are up in May and in November, too.
Now then, let's get to Mother's Day. Terry came in here today asking me what I got Marianne for Mother's Day, like I'm going to reveal that.
Do you want to know what Bob used to say to me when we first got together? And we had a baby and all that. And he would say, why would I get you something for Mother's Day? You're not my mother.
I didn't say that.
Oh, he never said that.
I never
tell
said
me.
That.
You
never no, said
that.
That
is a direct quote.
I don't remember that.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst thing you can say.
Yeah, that would
if you're
be.
Lucky enough to have a mother around still, you know, you're thinking, you always think of your mother, but your wife is the mother of your child.
Exactly.
Maybe
yeah.
I never.
Your wife is the mother of your child.
Maybe I never fully understood that immediately, but I don't believe
it.
I ever said
oh,
that.
Oh, please.
Well, maybe we as mothers didn't train our sons well enough to know that. So are you not telling what you got, Marianne?
Of course I'm not.
Is going to be a surprise for Mother's Day.
What yeah, why would think? I say now what I bought? If you're assuming I bought something.
Well, now, so here's
maybe I didn't.
Or did something. Well, yes, that was exactly about to be my point. So I was, what made me think of this this morning and really triggered this discussion with the question was, I was listening to something, you know, Mother's Day, I was on the radio listening in a commercial, Mother's Day, it'll be here, come, and all the newspaper inserts. You know, I opened an insert in the Sunday paper, 1,000 little jewelry things you could buy mm-hmm. your mother, like she needs another 1,000 mm-hmm. little jewelry things because you've been doing that for 15 years.
Yeah, by the way, no one should ever buy jewelry for anybody unless that person picks it out and wants it. If not, it just sits there in a drawer. Right?
I like yes, the first part of that statement. Nobody should ever buy jewelry for anybody.
No, you should buy jewelry if you can.
But it
should be what the person
there's
wants.
There's a sense that it's so material that you've got to buy some little thing so you can get these minuscule diamond stud earrings or a hanging pendant or mm-hmm. a, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about what moms would really like. What's the rarest thing? Now, for each family, it's different, each stage of life. But I think the great rare gift for most mothers, whether they're working outside the home or whether they're working in the home, don't you think the great rare gift is time?
Sure. For all of us.
For all of us. I mean, that's the rare commodity. I mean, we're not talking about someone who doesn't have even the basics of clothing and so forth. But why don't you give your mom the gift of time? Now, sometimes it's time to get away from the family. And in some cases, it's time you spend with your mom. So you can divide the world pretty much in half about that. If you have a mother of young kids and a working mom at that, then if you just buy her something like a spa day or an hour massage, and then you volunteer to take the kids without grumbling, that's a great gift. You sort of force her into taking time for herself.
Right. That's nice.
Okay. Now, on the other hand, if you're the adult child and your parents are older, what greater gift than you could give your mom than an hour with her without your iPhone?
Yes, Marianne. Listen to that. Talking with Terry Savage, investment advisor. And Terry, there's a lot of talk about Social Security always. And recently there was a piece in the paper about Social Security taxes and how some folks don't understand that they could land in a high tax bracket when they're taking Social Security. Although it's true that Social Security retirement benefits often are entirely tax-free. But for many others, taxes definitely apply, don't they?
Yeah, it originally started that way, that Social Security benefits were tax-free. But if you combine them with your other income over a certain level, and I'm going to have to Google that exact level, but up after a certain level, you are taxed on your Social Security benefits. Forget state taxes, federal taxes.
What if you're just getting Social Security benefits? I mean, are those people taxed?
Let me say a couple of things about Social Security. First of all, Social Security and Medicare, Part D and Part B, the parts you pay for, have all, in a way, become what we would call means-tested. In other words, if you have other income, I'm not arguing this shouldn't be the case, but people don't realize this, you will pay more for your Medicare Part B if you have other income. You will pay more for Medicare Part D, and a portion of the Social Security benefits you receive, depending on if you're collecting a big pension or you're still working but you collect Social Security, a good hunk of your Social Security benefits can be subject to ordinary income taxes. So I began really thinking a lot about this when I started thinking about Social Security, to tell you the truth. It used to be that for years and years, in every speech I gave, I'd say, Social Security isn't going to contribute anything meaningful to your retirement, so please keep opening an IRA and saving. That was just my party line.
I remember that.
Okay. You remember? I've always said that.
Yes, you've always said that.
Well, all of a sudden, you realize that for a third of the people who receive Social Security today, it's over 90% of their income. And for nearly two-thirds, it's half of their income. So if you've worked a full lifetime at a good-paying job today, you're still only getting a little over $2,000, maybe $2,200 a month. At that level, your Social Security benefits are not taxed. But that may – certainly I was right in saying that it won't provide your entire income. But sadly, because people didn't save or all kinds of reverses, for many people, they do count strongly on Social Security now. We have a generation of boomers who are suddenly thinking about Social Security. And I used to think that the real issue with when to take Social Security was how lucky do I feel and how long will the government keep paying? Because you could see that we have a huge obligation to the baby boomers. And Social Security, the trust funds, I'm not going to ignite a fire here, they're at certain point, not too far off in the future, when they will, quote, actuarially become underfunded, run out of money, and so forth. Chicago teachers got to, or firefighters have to worry about that in 3 or 4 years. For Social Security, it's longer, and we remember the government can always print the money. So I used to think maybe you want to take Social Security early, A, if you don't think you're going to live that long. You know, go to livingto100.com and take the quiz if you want to find your life expectancy. It's a very individual thing. Nobody knows what it is, but you go through all your habits and your family history and stuff, and you click, and it says you're going to live to be 96 or you only got 14 more years, whatever it might
be. What is that site again?
Living to 100, livingto100.com.
Okay.
And you can take the quiz. So if you thought that you were going to maybe not have, because of your health conditions or your family genetics, that you wouldn't live very long, you'd want to take Social Security earlier and make sure you collect it as much as you can. However, I can make three categorical statements and then lead you to a calculator about Social Security. Number one, do not take Social Security early when you're first eligible at age 62 because your benefits are so significantly and permanently reduced. And on top of that, any future cost of living increases are minimized because you took such an early start to Social Security. Do whatever you can to postpone taking Social Security till your full retirement age, which is now close to 67 for
people. So what's the latest that you can?
But you want to take it when you're 70, okay, because then that's when you're maxing out your benefits.
And then if you're 72, does it make a difference? Does it get better between 70 and 72?
No, you don't. For working longer, for delaying longer, you don't get any particular benefits. So you want to take your benefits at some point, but not early. Now, there's a real science to deciding whether you should delay, especially if you're part of a couple. And right on the homepage at terrysavage.com, there's a link to a really terrific calculator. You just can't miss it. It's called When to Take Social Security Benefits. T. Rowe Price, many other places have these, but I like theirs. T. Rowe Price, the mutual fund company, did a lot of research. And you can click in there and put in, I'm this age, my spouse is that age, we both get full retirement benefits. What do you think your life expectancy is? They ask you. That's why going to Living to 100. And they will give you an estimate and you can of when you can either A, maximize benefits for a surviving spouse. There are a lot of strategies about who should take Social Security first if you're a couple, or what maximizes your benefits, and how the total amount of your benefits will be expanded if you wait a little bit to take Social Security.
So in general, if you think you're going to live a long, healthy life, and we all do, we
and
all
that the
will,
government
we all
will
hope,
keep printing money.
Wait.
Yes,
in
and
general,
you believe
wait.
That the government will keep making the money available. Go to terrysavage.com and use the how to calculate your Social Security benefits. It's an art form now. I can't even give you a good rule except don't take it early if you can avoid it.
All right. Very good advice, as always, from Terry Savage. Talk to you next week. Have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you
happy
very
Mother's
much.
Day, Terry.
Market metrics and the latest headlines. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 W.
social media business now. What's trending? That's Scott Kleinberg's department, the So Social column in the Tribune. We just heard Steve do the story about the NFL. People are commenting on this already, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Back when this first started, before this report was released today, the hashtag was Deflategate. That was the big thing to watch. And right now, Deflategate is trending. It was trending within 5 minutes of the news being announced, and it's trending nationally. So it's all people are talking about it.
And what are they saying? Because the news is that the team was actually aware.
Yes. And the thing that is fascinating is that there are people who just like to make fun of Tom Brady. That is just something that people like to do. But there are a lot of people on here on Twitter right now who are saying that the Patriots should not win the Super Bowl. The Patriots should have to forfeit or whatever happens in this particular case. And people are adamant about it. They're like, there's absolutely no reason in the world why they should not be penalized for this.
To be continued. That's not going to go away anytime soon.
Nope. I love that you're going to be talking about digital eye strain today, because my son was telling me about some app to download that has these emojis that are different from the regular ones that you get. Huh. And so I downloaded it and I started to try to use them. I couldn't see anything. I mean, it's just everything is so tiny, no matter how big your phone is.
Yeah.
And I feel that strain all the time. I spent about 45 minutes just trying to look at these things.
And it's crazy, is this report is specifically about millennials, but you're right. I mean, even for me, I sit in front of my computer the entire day, and I find myself using the controls on my Mac to make the screen size bigger. And I kind of feel weird about that, because that's not something I've ever done before, but I notice myself doing that. I notice myself holding my phone further away from my face so I can see, you know, that thing. And even when I go to an eye doctor, they're always saying, take breaks during the day, because eye strain's a very real thing no matter what your age is. But this report, you know, is pretty fascinating, that 68% of millennials, you know, suffering from some sort of digital eye strain.
You're going to be hearing a lot about digital eye strain in the years ahead. It's just starting to be recognized.
And so what exactly is it, and what do you do about it besides just take time off? And does it affect you permanently?
Right. It's not something that necessarily affects you permanently if you stay away from the screen for a while, but it's because we stare at the screen for such a long period of time, and it's the different colors of the different screens. Like, you get a bright screen, you know, when you're using your iPhone at night when you're in bed, and you get a yellower screen when you're at work, and there's bright light over your head, so the combination of fluorescent lights and the light hitting your screen. So there's all kinds of things that happen, and, you know, it's that dryness, and we don't blink as much when we have digital, when our eyes are strained. So we don't have as much moisture in our eyes, and they get dry, and that's why people use eye drops and that sort of thing.
Look away, people. Look away now and then.
Take a break whenever you can. And that's why they say using your phone in the dark right before you're going to bed is the worst thing you can do for your eyes.
Let's talk about Google Plus and Google Plus getting a little bit more like Pinterest. Are people using Google Plus?
Not as a social network, and I think Google realizes that. I think this is what Google is trying to do to get people to use it more, to be visual, to make it look more like Pinterest. So they're making these collections. So if you put in a whole bunch of stories about digital eye strain, you can put them under one collection called Eye Strain, and all of the stories will be in there with whatever photos are attached to it, and you can share that entire collection versus sharing one story at a time. You can still share a story at a time, but this is a way to share it in different ways. I think that Google is quickly realizing that as a social network, Google Plus is not working.
It's just that there are too many other things that do similar things. Facebook. You don't want to have to transfer all your you already have all these people who are your friends. I mean, how can you translate that to Google Plus?
It's very hard.
It's very hard. And then you have Twitter, and then you have Pinterest. I mean, you can't. Why would somebody use Google Plus instead of Pinterest if they're already on Pinterest?
And that is such a good question, because when Google Plus came out, they were like, we don't want to be Facebook. We want to be a completely separate network. But they had all these features that were like Facebook, because they were trying to get these people who were using Facebook to come over to them. So you're right. It's a completely separate network. And why would you use one if you already have the other? That's just that's the key.
However, when you see what Google Plus offers, every time I go to Google Plus, and I am a member, I can't believe how much better it is than Facebook. I wish everybody was on Google Plus.
And I'm sure that's exactly what Google Plus wants as well, but that's the problem. Your friends are where your friends are, and you share what your friends share, and you could have the best content in the world, but it's never seen, and that's the most unfortunate thing when it comes to Google Plus. They had a great potential, but they didn't take it the way it needed to be taken, the direction it needed to be taken.
Right. A couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Periscope, no one had ever heard of it. Now, because of the fight, everybody's talking about Periscope and what's happening with Meerkat as well now.
So Meerkat is the other live streaming app, and both Meerkat and Periscope are tied completely to Twitter. There was no Facebook tie whatsoever. Now, all of a sudden, Meerkat is trying to separate itself from Twitter because it's a separate company. It needs to do that. And it's letting you send your streams to Facebook so you can live stream and see the streams in Facebook. The problem right now is it's just for Facebook pages. So if you have a personal profile, you can't use Meerkat with your personal profile, but you can use it if you have a business or a brand page. So it's limited.
So then you're not, when you're using it, it's not live anymore. I mean, it's a video of what was live. Is that what it is?
Not in this case. In this case, you can actually broadcast live to Facebook if you have a Facebook brand page. So it's limited in that way. It's better for businesses, which is a good thing. And if you click on, I haven't done this yet, but if you click on a stream from within Facebook, you can then sign up for Meerkat using Facebook, which is a weird backdoor into it. But otherwise, you have to use your Twitter credentials to sign in.
You know what's fascinating about this era we live in where the technology moves so quickly? Words like Periscope and Meerkat, you do not use them. You've never heard of them, not in your vocabulary. And then all of a sudden, that's all you're talking about.
Hey, yeah.
Overnight. Right?
I used to always use a Periscope when I was little, and I talked about it.
Well, maybe
too.
That one. Scott Kleinberg, we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you, Scott. Let's talk a little bit about job interviews. We all love those, don't we?
Yeah. You know, there's only, what is it? There's only a one time to make a good first impression. Is that right?
Something like that. We're going to find out right now. Tom Gimbel is here, founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, and they recently did a very interesting survey about job interviews. How you doing, Tom? Welcome to WGN.
I'm doing great, guys. Glad to be with you.
What was the headline of the survey, the findings of the survey?
I think it was Hawks are up 3-0.
Yeah. Thankfully.
We like that.
The headline was the survey was where interview stress comes from. And I think it's something that we overlook, and everybody knows that they're stressed before it, and some people aren't stressed, and it's a lot of times false bravado. And people have to really be clear about why they're nervous, what they're nervous about. I always use the expression with people when I interview them, and they can't answer questions about their own work experience. I say, how do you not know about you? It's mm-hmm. the one topic you should really know about.
And saying the wrong thing is the number one fear in these situations, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so often what people say, I interview a ton of people for my firm and for my clients, and what people will come back to me and say during the interview and throughout is, I'm a great judge of character.
Yeah.
Right? I'm really good at reading people, and I look at them, what am I thinking right now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You should let somebody else think that about you.
Exactly right.
But don't you think people are just nervous? I mean, I know that when I'm going to meet somebody for a possible job, I'm a little nervous because I just don't even know, like, anything that I can expect. If I don't know the person, what are they going to be like? Are they going to be in a bad mood? You know, how can I mean, I'm not worried about what I'm going to say. I'm just worried about the whole experience.
Well, and I think the more exposure you have to more different types of people on a continual basis, and I think what people limit themselves. So you go to work, you do your job, you go home, you're with your family, you wake up, you do it again. On the weekends, you're in your social circle,
right.
And that's it. And the key is you have to put yourself out continually and learn about other people and talk to other people and listen to what they're saying and learn to react to different things.
So are you saying go on job interviews on a regular
basis? No, I'm not even saying job interviews. I think more if you go to networking, if you go to different conferences within your own industry or your space, you've got to get in the habit of talking to people. And I think people should always be networking and thinking about their careers. And even internally, if you work for a big company, there's no reason you shouldn't be talking to managers, directors, vice presidents in other areas of the company too.
When you go to a job interview, how much time and energy should you devote to second-guessing what you think that person is going to be looking for?
Well, I think what a lot of people do is they'll talk to people they know who are leaders in companies, and they'll say, do you know of any jobs that are out there? Are you guys hiring? But they won't ever say, what do you want in people you hire? And that's the key, is to ask as many people in leadership roles of what types of characteristics they want. And then you don't have to think about what leaders want. You actually know.
All right. My son, who's 23 years old, just graduating from film school, thought he had a job because he had an interview on the phone with somebody who from a production yep. company. And then he had a start date. Very nice. And the day of the start date, he gets a message, a text saying, we've changed our mind about you. We've hired somebody else. So how?
That's terrible.
That's terrible.
That's terrible.
But how do you, what do you do in a situation like that where you don't really know what happened during that interview or if anything did happen? How do you stop feeling bad about yourself?
Well, the number one thing I would tell your son is you wouldn't want to work for those people anyways. I think it's the number one thing that you tell yourself. And it's easy to say from the cheap seats, but you know the types of people you work for the day you quit or the day you're fired of who those people were, how they handle those situations. And if someone's going to fire you via text, people make decisions, they make mistakes, management comes in, they say to do a different thing than what you had planned. Things happen. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But that's a terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
And to do it over text, you don't want to work for that company.
I'm so glad you said that.
Absolutely.
I'm
someone's communicating.
And then
is it appropriate when you go to a job interview, you don't get a job? Maybe nothing as traumatic as this happens, but you know, you just don't hear from them, or you're told, well, we went another direction. Is it appropriate? Is it proper to go back to the person and say, can I have some feedback on our interview?
Yeah, I think you shouldn't expect that you're always going to get it. But I don't think it's inappropriate to send an email to somebody and say, I understand that you went with somebody else. I realize there's a million fish in the sea. However, at the same time, if there's any feedback that you can give me on how I behaved. Now, we just live in a litigious society and where people don't like to give feedback to somebody, especially in writing. And it's it's a terrible thing that you can't get real feedback from somebody about how you behaved on an interview.
I got to get the news on so I don't have to go on a job interview. I don't want to get fired. Tom Gimbel, thank you. The LaSalle Network is the place. And come back and see us again. Good advice.
Yeah, come back and see us. We need to talk more about this.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Bob Sherrod and Marianne Murciano on 720 WGN.